I'm Ken Hemmings, and he is Chris Lang, and welcome to another of these regular property briefings. Again, a warm welcome to you, Chris.
Thank you, and I'm glad to be with you.
Do you mind if we backtrack a little?
Not at all. What have you got in mind?
Well, a few weeks ago, we covered some of the lessons Simon Kelly learnt from the Irish property crash as a result of the global financial crisis. And one of those points related to understanding the true relationship you have as an investor with your financier. I think you briefly mentioned how one of your clients assumed he enjoyed a privileged position being a private banking client with Westpac. Would you mind exploring that a little further?
Yeah, that was an interesting story. And it was a client who was a Westpac private bank client, and he'd purchased a property or was about to purchase a property worth, I guess, $1.5 million, maybe $1.6 million. So it was a reasonable size property. And he had already a number of properties in his portfolio, which the bank held all the titles and simply just advanced him some more money whenever he wanted to buy another property he thought was suitable. So he was reluctant to move away from the cozy relationship that he had with his bank. Now, I already knew that from talking with the finance broker that I use, Perry Finance, that they could do a whole lot better than what he was being quoted as a rate. In fact, it was about 0.75% better. Anyway, he was in a dilemma, and I said to him, look, he said, they always look after me. And I said, well, I'm not sure that they are looking after you. And I said, I know it's uncomfortable, because he said, look, I really don't want to ring up and challenge the account manager that's looking after him. He said, you know, I've got a good relationship with him and I don't want to bruise that. So I said to him, look, how about we have Cameron Perry give him a call, because that way he can say things to him that you can't say without causing some upset. And the sort of things he would say is, look, you know, I've been asked to have a look at this. At the moment, it appears that I can do a far better job quoting the rate that Cameron can pull off. And at the same time, he can imply that if he, the Westpac client manager, can't do as good, if not better than that, well, he will lose this deal, and also there's a fair chance that his client, who is just about to buy this property, is likely to ask Cameron Perry to also refinance all his other properties. Well, that conversation was had, and he hung up the phone, and within about half an hour, maybe an hour, this client of mine, who was a client of Westpac, got a phone call from his private client manager saying that he'd just uncovered a new product that could shave about 0.75% off the loan. Now, we didn't get into discussion over the other properties that he might be paying too much for, but on this particular one, he ended up with exactly the same deal as Perry Finance could have got for him at another source. And, of course, he was ecstatic. And I said to him, look, you haven't gone with Perry Finance, but I think it would be fair and reasonable if you actually rang them up and agreed to pay their fee on it, because they've saved you probably 10, maybe 15, could be even more, $1,000 in interest over the, I think it was a 3 or 4 year period. So he happily paid it. I mean, it was a fraction of the saving that he'd been able to achieve. And, you know, I was delighted. So, you know, you've just got to be very, very careful. And you would think, as a private client of a bank, that, yes, they would look after you, but you've got to understand the banks are looking after themselves. And once they feel they've got you as a client, they'll probably try and stretch that relationship. I think they had gotten too far. They probably cribbed a few percentage points each time a new loan was done, but it had gotten out to 0.75%, and they really weren't looking after their client. So it's something you need to keep an eye on.
So if private banking clients encounter problems, what hope do first-time investors have?
Well, Ken, they've actually got more clout and influence and power than you might think. Because I remember there was a young couple going back a few years who were about to apply for a loan, and they, as you said, felt exposed and felt they had to go cap in hand to the bank. And I said to them, look, do you both bank at the same bank? Are your accounts there? And they said, well, no, I think one was Westpac, one was ANZ. So I said, look, go into it and go to the husband's bank. And if you aren't getting the deal you want, or even if you feel it's a good deal, but just want to put them under a little bit of pressure, as you get close to the end of what you think you can get out of them, have your wife say to you, or probably, no, you say to your wife, look, you know, I don't know whether this is the best deal we're going to get. You bank with ANZ. I think we might just go across and have a word to them and see what they've got to offer. Now, I can promise you, and this is what happened, that Westpac, or whoever that first bank is, won't let you out the door. I mean, you've got to remember they're a salesperson. Their remuneration or bonus at the end of each month are based on the deals that they can lock in. And they don't want you walking around to ANZ, even if it ends up, and that's the fear they've got, that all ANZ will do is match the rate that they've got. But because you're there, you're not going to come back to Westpac. You'll do the deal with ANZ. So they don't want you to leave. Right? They're in the business of selling money. And that's what you've got to understand. That's what they got. They buy money from their depositors and they sell it to you as a borrower. So it's in their interest to do the deal. And it may be that they sweeten it by saying, well, look, I'll tell you what we'll do. If you commit now, we'll waive any fees in setting up the mortgage, or, you know, if depending on the size of the property, they might say, look, we'll pay half the valuation fee or something like that. That they'll sweeten in some way that stops you walking out the door. So it has to be an innocent comment. It can't be, look, it all look contrived. And all you're doing is creating the illusion of competition. Now, as soon as you can create the illusion of competition, the power shifts to you, because they now understand that they just can't wield the stick, because if they wield it too hard, you're just going to walk next door. And so it's a game. It's a very serious game, but it's one of the ploys in negotiating that can often swing a deal, particularly when you've gotten to the end and they feel that they've got you, and all of a sudden you sort of pull the rug from under their feet.
Apart from creating the illusion of competition, what else can you do to gain greater control when borrowing to fund your investments?
Well, there are actually two things you can do, one before you buy and one after you buy. And the first thing is that, as you've heard me say in previous podcasts, that you need to put together your consulting team, and one of the members of your consulting team are a valuer, particularly if you intend to buy a number of properties. Now, they don't all have to be in the next 6 months. They might be bought over the next 3 or 4 years. But you set up a relationship with the valuer. And this is what I've effectively done on behalf of my clients, because I refer a lot of them to this particular valuer. And the first thing you do is get the valuer to provide you with a figure up to which they are prepared to support. Now, it's not a formal valuation, but the valuer, if you pick them rightly, will either know the property you're buying or know of it that you're looking to buy, and you can send them an information memorandum and some background information, and they can give you a figure. They may even give you a pretty tight range. They look, well, ideally we'd like you to get it for here, but look, you know, if it went to this, we'd still support that sort of figure, so that you then know what is your upper limit. Now, if you can get it for less than that, that's a bonus. They won't value it at the figure, their upper limit, if you get it for less. They'll only value it at the figure you pay. But if you end up paying more than their upper limit, they'll only value it at their suggested upper limit. Now, sometimes, depending on your motivation for buying the property, you may well be prepared to pay a bit more. But you need to understand that if you do that, you will have to chip in a bit more equity because they've given you an upper limit. Now, what that also enables you to do is very accurately work out your loan-to-value ratio so that you can ensure that you have enough equity. And, of course, when you're working out your equity, you need to allow for your add-ons like stamp duty, legals, and any other acquisition costs, because they don't come out of the loan figures. They come out of your pocket as part of the equity contribution that you put in. So what this does is also provide you with a lot of comfort because you know, having signed the figure signed the contract at their figure or lower, that you're not going to have any surprises down the track. Because unlike residential property, where generally what you pay for it is what they'll value it at, because there's a lot of similar properties around that they can get a yardstick, and so do you going in. Commercial property is different. Commercial property has a different value if it's vacant to what it is if it's let. Not the case of residential. Whether it's tenanted or vacant, it doesn't seem to alter the value that much. So it's very much determined by rent and therefore the capitalisation rate. And so it's a harder animal to tie down for people who are not altogether experts in it. So that's why it's important to have the independent person, ideally the valuer, who will ultimately have to assess the value and what it's worth, to have a look at it before you go in and even buy the property. It just allows you to sleep at night, know that you're not going to have any surprises once you've signed the contract, and then go and try and organise the finance.
You said there were two things.
Yes, that's right. And they still involve the valuer, because one thing I would recommend is that you personally don't go visit the finance source or sources. And the reason I say that is because you will have to go to each one personally and visit them. If you use a broker, as I recommend with all my clients, that broker knows at that moment who is offering the best deal. He doesn't have to go visit them. They supply him on a regular basis, either by email or web advice or whatever it is, what their current deal is. And from month to month, different financiers have different specials, for want of a better word, where they're trying to balance their loan book, that they might have a 0.25% off or a 0.5% off for the next 28 days. So the finance broker knows that. So the secret here is that you should be the one instructing the valuer. Now, most people, even using a finance broker in a traditional sense, allows the finance broker to decide who's the best source, that's fine, but then makes the application, agrees to it, and allows the bank to organise the valuation. Now, the banks are very conservative and can give an instruction to a valuer and say, look, just make sure you do a very conservative valuation. So they can never be challenged, and the valuers then aren't likely to get into trouble and cause a PI problem for them if anyone challenges it. But if you organise the valuation, it means that you own it at that point, and you get it as a soft copy, and you give it to the broker. Now, the broker then sends it out by email to one, two, three different sources. And by doing that, it means that they're on notice that you're looking elsewhere. You don't have to say that. They know that if you own the valuation, they've received a copy, they are not by themselves. They have to come up with their best deal. So even if they've come to a deal with, offered a deal to the finance broker to pass on to you, they may even be able to sweeten it a little bit more. But what's more important is that you lock in the commercial terms, and then when you decide which of the financiers you want to run with, the finance broker says, well, now let's have the documentation. And so then you freeze not only the commercial terms, but the format of the mortgage agreement. Because if you leave it to the bank to organise the valuation, they own it. And invariably, I found 2, 3, 4 weeks out before settlement, they come to you and they say some spurious excuse and say, look, the credit committee's a bit nervous. You know, the dollar's dropped and oil prices are down and China's not looking too good, and they want to take a lien over your business, or they'd like to just have some sort of charge over your family home, which you had no intention of offering as security. Now, 3 weeks out, you've got nowhere to go because they own the valuation, whereas if you own the valuation, if that were to happen, which I've never had it happen doing it this way, you can at least go to your second best choice. Because if you have to go and organise a valuation that close to settlement, A, it doesn't look good. The valuer is under pressure, so he's going to charge you not only a second fee if you organise a valuation, but it will probably be top dollar. And you go to another finance source at the last minute, they're going to drive a hard bargain because they know, you know, it's taken you a week to 10 days to get the valuation. You've only got a week to 10 days till you settle. I mean, it's not a good place to be. And so I'm in the business of getting rid of surprises so that you, as the investor, control the process all the way through. And all I've done in the way I structure things is just look at what's been done in the past, rearrange the order. Sure, the banks don't like it because they want to be in control, but they know that you're entitled to have a valuation. The valuation is required, and it's not until you get the commercial terms you want and the legal documentation that you want do you then assign the valuation. In other words, you have the value now issue a hard copy bound and what have you in the bank's name, and he or she delivers that to the bank, and because they're already on their panel, there's no issue, and the finance broker will have made sure of that. So those are the two key things that will ensure that you are in control of your finance.
Is there anything else investors ought to be wary of?
You're probably the one that most people overlook and don't fully understand is what's called cross-collateralisation. Now, going back to that Westpac client, private client, he literally just lodged all the titles with them and they just took charges over all the properties. Now, the thing is that no one property stood on its own 2 feet. So if you wanted to sell one property, you would imagine that you could get, after the loan relating to that property was repaid, the funds would become available for you if you had a specific need that you wanted them for. But with a cross-collateralisation, where the banks control a basket of properties, they can say, well, no, you can't have the equity that you think's now free in the property. We want at least half of that. probably two-thirds to reduce our exposure on the other properties. So you are at the behest of the financier if you allow them to cross-collateralise. So that's why I, with my clients, say to them, look, you really ought to have each property in its own separate unit trust. And that has to do with risk and exposure, so that it doesn't, anything that goes on with that property can't contaminate another property. But also that every loan that you organise stands alone in relation to that property. Now, you may choose to have a line of credit somewhere else to provide equity for the, or part of the equity for that trust that's buying the property. But when you actually take the loan out that you're offering that property as security for, that loan is tied to that property and that property alone. So therefore, if you choose to sell the property, once you've repaid the loan, you get to keep all the equity that remains, and including the growth that's occurred over the period of your ownership. So that's probably one of the, it's easy to make. It's convenient. I mean, it's so easy just to walk in and say, well, the bank holds it all. I know where all the titles are. All I got to do is ring them up and get some more money. That's not the issue. The problem is when you come to sell and untangling the web that they've created. And I can assure you it'll be a complicated web because it's for their benefit, not yours.
Well, when you explain it the way that you have, the funding process seems a lot simpler than I'd imagined.
Well, whenever you don't fully understand something because you're not dealing with it every day, it can be rather daunting. And as I explained to my mentor group, gaining control over the finance process involves these two simple actions, which form part of my overall 9-step formula.
Chris, I'm sure our listeners will have found this really helpful. So, thank you.
It's my pleasure, Ken.